Hi, I'm Sylvia Moss. Got a lot of really good information for you today. Most of us are going to be affected by one of the topics. Actually, not most of us. All of us are going to be affected. And the other one deals with a great deal of our population. We're going to talk about preventing the complications of a terrible disease and important aspects of health care reform. Everybody's tossing this around, but I don't think the majority of people out there understand what it's all about. A few years ago, I had the honor of being the chair of the Diabetes Tour to Cure, and at that time, the statistics went like this. There were 18 million people walking around with diabetes, and I think it was a few million more didn't even know they have it. Well, things have got a whole lot worse. As of 2011, now this is a report that comes from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, there are more than almost 26 million adults and kids who were diagnosed with diabetes and were living with it as of last year. We're going to talk today about dental health. We had talked with the people from United Concordia about this. They have wonderful experts coming in. We talked and a returning guest today is Dr. James Branson. He's the chief dental officer at United Concordia. He's going to talk to us a lot about what we don't know about dental health, how taking real good care of your teeth will have an impact on the rest of your body. And also, as far as the health reform changes and exchanges and plans, we have Kurt Shook. Kurt is the director of health care reform exchanges with United Concordia. First of all, my old buddy, Dr. Branson, and I like to torment the heck out of him because he's such a good guy and he's so well informed. Talk to us a little bit. Remember when you were in a couple of months ago and we talked about what people don't realize, that taking care of their teeth or not taking care of their dental health is going to have an impact on our bodies. Can you get into that a little bit?
Sure. The general concept here is that oral health is connected to overall health. Mm-hmm. And it's mostly research and a look at how periodontal disease, which is gum disease, affects your overall body health. Gum disease is an inflammatory disease. There's bacteria that, as they grow, they create an inflammation around the tissues around your teeth, and that can affect the levels of that inflammation throughout your body. So the literature has begun to try to look and connect whether there are certain diseases, chronic diseases, that are more affected by periodontal disease than others. Diabetes is definitely the one that we've probably done the most research on. November is actually Diabetes Awareness Month, which I guess is part of the other reason why we wanted to come and talk. But what we've done is we've taken a look at the science literature, which shows this association between periodontal disease and diabetes. We at the insurance company thought, well, perhaps we might be able to look more carefully at how that sort of plays out economically. How does that sort of affect people's medical coverage? So we did a very large study that we released last year. We came and talked about that, and I have some additional findings today from another way we looked at that particular study. But it had about 1.7 million people in it that had both Highmark's medical insurance for 3 years and United Concordia's dental insurance for 3 years. So we were looking at people who had both of those two coverages. And there was about 91,000 diabetics. And if you looked at the diabetics who had periodontal treatment done and taken care of versus all the diabetics that didn't, they saved on average of about $1,800 per year in lower medical costs when you looked at the cost for hospitalization and the cost for going to the doctor. So the treating your dental disease, treating your periodontal disease, is not only a way to make you healthier, it's a way to save money. So we went into that same study and looked at the pharmacy costs that are connected with it. Again, the first two were just, what does it cost to go into the hospital, mm-hmm. and how much does it cost to kind of go to the doctor if you're a diabetic and have this treated or untreated? So we went back and looked at all the pharmacy costs associated with those same people that we looked at before, and the diabetics that were treated for their periodontal disease after about 7 visits of being treated for that, which isn't uncommon for a patient with periodontal disease over a period of a year and a half or two, their average pharmacy costs also were reduced by $1,477 per year. So when you add those up, you get somewhere in the range of about a $3,200 possible annual savings in just health care costs associated with treating your periodontal disease if you're a diabetic. Mm-hmm. So those are significant costs. They're important for us to note, and it helps us as a carrier in working with our parent company, Highmark, talk about how do we put programs together to get additional benefits to people who have diabetes so that we can treat their illnesses and also help them become healthier and also help the employer with their overall healthcare costs.
Well, the major impact that diabetes has is on the blood vessels.
Right.
Correct. And with the mouth being so all pretty much all blood vessels, is that why you decided to take the look at diabetes?
Well, diabetes, as I said, it's an inflammatory disease as well.
Yeah.
I mean, increased levels of certain proteins in the bloodstream tend to affect certain organs. So diabetes, you know, has a lot of complications, what they call comorbidity, where eye disease, some people lose
right.
the circulatory problems, as you mentioned,
exactly.
you know, affects people's feet sometimes. They have renal disease, diseases with their kidneys aren't all that uncommon with people with diabetes. So it has a lot of effects around the body. And what we found is that the increased levels of the inflammation circulating throughout the bloodstream are clearly elevated in people who have larger cases of periodontal
mm-hmm.
disease. So, you know, it gets in through the pores and
sure.
the bloodstream that's around the teeth.
Well, you know, with such a terrible increase, not only in everyone getting diabetes, but also with children, what do we do about that? And let me ask you this. Did the report, the research that was done, did that include different age groups?
It did, but they were all adults. They were over 18. So
okay.
it didn't necessarily look at type 2 diabetics, so it's adult onset diabetics. Didn't necessarily look at type 1 diabetes, the juvenile diabetics.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. You know, the data is really out there beginning to show that those levels of diabetic or pre-diabetic conditions in our earlier children are certainly increasing. Whether that's the same kind of disease or not, I think it's probably a little bit different. Issues of diet and potential obesity are generally thought to be much heavier contributors to the blood sugar levels in those younger children. But this particular study didn't, because you don't really see the breadth and depth of periodontal disease
yeah,
in children the
age,
way that you do in adults.
Can you tell us exactly what periodontal disease is for those who might not know?
Yeah, well, you know, we call it that. Other people call it gum disease. So typically what you have is tissues around the teeth that get inflamed. They'll swell, they'll bleed, and there's a little attachment of that tissue to the tooth root. While that's inflamed and bleeding and swollen for a long period of time, that attachment begins to work its way down the root of the tooth. In other words, it recedes away from the inflammation, and the bone levels around the teeth as well as that attachment generally go down. So what happens is you get receding gums, or you get deep pockets around those teeth, and you get loss of bone around there. The deeper those pockets go, the more bacteria that can grow in there, and the harder it is to clean. And I tell a lot of people, you know, if you were a bacteria, the best place in the world to live would be the mouth, because it's wet, you know, it's warm, mm-hmm. and you get fed three times a day.
Exactly.
So those are all good things if you're a bacteria. So there's a lot of good places for them to grow in there. Keeping them out of there and keeping things clean is the secret to keeping that tissue healthy, and as a result, you can lower the levels of the bacteria in your bloodstream.
You know, it's funny because when you guys come in here and you start talking about teeth, I see my sister, when she gets done eating, going in her big purse and pulling out that dental floss.
Good for her.
Yeah,
okay.
How about it?
You know?
Are there certain, you know, there are certain things that add to our susceptibility to getting all kinds of diseases. Would genetics play into anything like this?
It's not thought that that's a huge factor. It's mostly a local factor, in that, you know, it mostly has to do with the levels and the ability to keep the teeth clean.
Mm-hmm.
Now, certainly other diseases can compound that, obviously. So we don't say that one causes the other. It's not like diabetes causes periodontal disease,
oh,
but
yeah.
you see them in different, more levels, and in higher risk diabetics, you generally see worse cases of periodontal disease. That's also why we're taking the study to now look at other kinds of conditions. We're looking at mothers who deliver low birth weight infants. We're looking at cardiovascular disease, heart disease. We're looking at cerebrovascular disease. We're looking at rheumatoid arthritis and lupus, to do the same kind of sort of look back study to sort of say, you know, did those people, if they had periodontal disease and get it treated, can we make the same kind of association that, you know, just becoming healthier because of what we can do to improve the health of your mouth could have a substantial effect across a lot of different kinds of chronic diseases. We developed a rider for our insurance policies around diabetes, but I would suspect that we would add other diseases to it as our research helps us understand them better.
Well, how will that impact? Of course, the results that came out of this test, are you going to save a lot of money? Do you think that's going to be the standard?
I would hope so. I mean, I think what we can easily show is that the small additional cost that you would pay to do some additional dental procedures, and that's basically what our rider is. It's mm-hmm. additional procedures and better payment, better co-payments for the ones that we have in there, that's more than offset by the savings that you'll get. So we're out partnering with healthcare companies, our parent, as well as others around the country, as well as companies that do wellness activities. So company ABC might hire some company that does their wellness activities for their employees. So they coach them, they help give them information. We're working with wellness companies as well to make sure that they get information about the connection here between periodontal disease and overall health, and educate their coaches to help make sure that while they're talking to people about nutrition or perhaps tobacco cessation or some of the other kinds of programs that, you know, they want people to join a gym and do all the other kinds of things, they need to start talking to them about their dental health as well.
Are those programs working?
Yes, I think so. If they find that the sort of passive programs where you mm-hmm. just sort of touch people with a newsletter every now and then probably isn't nearly as effective as you'd like it to be, but the active coaching programs that companies use is pretty darn effective.
I know there are companies out there, a lot of health-related companies are now saying to their employees, someone told me about this the other day, we are not going to hire anybody who's a smoker. Be smoke-free for 6 months, or we're not going to hire anybody that does this, or you have to weigh this much according to what we feel you should weigh, or your premiums are going to go up. How do you feel about that?
Well, we even have a program at Highmark where Kurt and I work, where we're incentivized to do screenings to make sure we're aware of our cholesterol levels, to make sure that we're aware of our what's called the BMI, body mass index. We're incentivized on our premiums by participating in those kinds of programs.
Now, incentivized, you're talking about we'll lower your premium rates. Okay.
The portion that we pay as employees is lower.
Okay.
If we do the kinds of behaviors that they hope that we would do, and we're also including for all of our employees. Starting 1/1/13, the UC Wellness Rider that has to do with periodontal disease and chronic and for diabetics as well. So, you know, I would see, you know, our parent company finding additional ways to do those kinds of things. I know of a company out east here that actually has a lifestyle rewards program where you get points for doing the right thing, and those points sort of add up, and then you can do things with those points.
Well, that's a great idea.
You can reduce your premiums with them, or you can reduce your deductibles or some of those kinds of things. So there has to be methods in there by which people get something out of it. If they get something financially as well as being healthy, that's a double win.
That's exactly right. Talk to me a little bit. Now, we talked about a periodontal disease. It's mostly kids weren't involved in it because they really don't get it at that early age. This might seem like a silly question, but as people get older, do the majority of the people out there still have their teeth?
The incidence of people being what we call edentulate or without any teeth, mm-hmm. Continues to go down sort of year over year over year. So we've been pretty effective in reducing that from, you know, what it was, you know, decades ago to what it is today. As a carrier that pays claims, I can tell you we still pay claims for dentures. Mm-hmm. So in fact, you know, it's occurring. But it's not occurring with the kind of incidence that it used to. It's it's more likely that people will have at least some complement of teeth rather than lost them all.
When can we expect to see these changes applied to our policies that are reflected in the dental reports?
For the chronic diseases like diabetes?
Yes.
Well, we filed this in 26 states around the country. Pennsylvania is one of them. We just filed in the rest of the states because we have some national business. We've actually sold a number of clients for this, and we have quite a number of folks as of 1/1/13 that are going to be covered by this additional rider in the educational programs that surround it. So, you know, we just think it's part of the maturation of the medical-dental integration and a place that we need to go from a wellness standpoint.
So pretty much what we're saying is what we had talked about 20 years ago about prevention, it's finally getting through to people out there.
Well, not only
right?
is it getting through, but we can show with numbers, it actually...
Here's the proof.
There's the financial proof,
mm-hmm,
too. So,
exactly.
So it takes away another one of those barriers about, you know, why we wouldn't want to do it. And we can help incent carriers that we work with to find a way to provide additional benefits at the same time, reap the savings of that.
If you won't mind, I'm going to switch gears a little bit to Kurt and ask Kurt, you know, People are talking about health care reform, and I really don't think the majority of the people out there, it's like a sore wound that's trying to heal, and it's pulled open and then it's closed again. Should we be afraid of health care reform, of the act?
No, I don't think we should be afraid. In fact, the intent of the Affordable Care Act was really to make the process of shopping for insurance easier.
Okay.
And to give consumers additional choice, especially those Americans who may not have access to care today.
Let me ask you this, and I was talking with someone about this the other day. A lot of these chambers of commerce, associations, people join those organizations because they can get great deals on group health insurance. What kind of an impact is it going to have on them?
Well, with the new act, every consumer is required to have coverage.
Right.
And small employers, those that have greater than 50 employees, must provide coverage for their employees,
mm-hmm.
or they'll end up paying a penalty, a financial penalty.
What is that penalty? It's a percentage, or is there a formula for it?
Yeah, there is a formula, and it does vary depending on the degree or the level of benefits that they would provide and the income of their employees.
Is it more... is it cheaper for them to pay the penalty or to provide the health insurance?
Well, that's a great question. And many consultants have made a lot of money, frankly, trying to advise their clients on that. It really, frankly, depends on the type of employer, what type of salary their employees are being paid. In some instances, it may be more advantageous for that employer to let their employees go to the exchange because they will be subsidized by the federal government. And therefore, it could be cheaper. However, in other cases, it may be actually better for the employer to retain their coverage that they mm-hmm. have today.
So. Now, what type of coverage are we talking about here? Would the employer have the same coverage for every employee?
That is one option.
Okay.
There are other options where the employer could provide coverage for, they could allow, if you will, their lower income employees to go to the exchange.
Okay.
So it really would be a hybrid approach. But generally speaking, most employers right now, the word on the street is they're really waiting to make the decision as to whether they're going to retain their coverage or drop and let their employees go to the exchange.
Mm-hmm. And this isn't going to go into effect until 2014.
That's correct.
January 2014. Okay. We have all these people out there, and I know I shouldn't be asking this because you don't know this one. I don't think anybody knows this. Millions of people do not have jobs, and they can't get food for their kids.
Mm-hmm.
How in the world are they going to pay for insurance? And then we're going to get it from the government, but then the government gets bigger.
Right.
I mean, it's like ridiculous.
Yeah, part of the concern, and Dr. Bramson and I were talking about this earlier today, is that coverage will become more expensive for everybody.
Yeah.
Because whether the federal government provides subsidies for those Americans who don't have coverage, in the end, that coverage, that cost has to be paid for by somebody. And it will end up being reflected in the premiums that everybody pays.
So we're no better off. We're worse off with this. Except it does cover pre-existing conditions. You can keep your kids on until they're, what, 25, 26?
26, yeah,
what else? You can't be turned away.
Right. Your carrier can't rescind coverage that is in force as well, should you become sick.
And what if you decide, I don't want it, I'll take my chances?
Well, as an American, that is your right, and you would end up paying a penalty for not enrolling in a coverage. Beginning in 2014, the penalty would be $95 a year or 1% of your income, whichever is greater. A family of four would pay a little over $2,000 or 2.5% of that household's income.
Would the benefits still be as good? Say you get a middle-of-the-road, you decide to take a middle-of-the-road policy. Would the benefits be as good as the policies that you had before? The benefits you had in your policy before for the same amount of money?
I think that's really a decision that each consumer is going to have to make for themselves. As a condition of being on the exchange, carriers will have to meet certain criteria. They also have to, in terms of providing certain levels of quality, access to care in terms of networks. But you will also see lower levels of coverage as well. So consumers may be incentivized to purchase a program that is not as rich as what they have today through their employer.
What a mess. What a mess. It's awful. We can talk about health care as far as insurances. But what about the actual health care in provided by doctors and hospitals?
Well, they're impacted as well. Again, it gets back to your earlier question regarding cost and how can we afford this? So there are going to be changes, both in terms of the delivery of care, how providers are reimbursed for their services, as well as the actual, to your point earlier, the level of benefits that are rendered.
Mm-hmm.
So over the last 18 months, carriers, as well as the federal government and state governments, have been reviewing what constitutes essential health benefits, these 10 categories that are called out in the Affordable Care Act. And can carriers substitute benefits between types of coverage? How do you classify those benefits? Those are some of the questions that are being decided right now, and we're expecting, frankly, guidance from Health and Human Services later this month, hopefully. That will help, again, the states and carriers make decisions.
For those who don't understand what an exchange is, can you explain that a little bit?
An exchange is really just a marketplace that allows individuals or small employers to compare different carriers, insurance carriers, as well as the product offerings from those carriers. And most exchanges will have various filters, so you can sort based on price. You can sort based on whether your provider is in the network, based on whether carrier name. But it's really just it's similar to an Amazon or Expedia,
okay,
those type of Travelocity, those type of concepts where.
But they will be providers in your state. Why don't they get rid of all this baloney and just open up competition across the country? Let all the insurance companies compete against each other.
Well, some would definitely like that. There's certainly a case to be made for, if you will, a national exchange. And there are exchanges that are offered by consultants. They're called private exchanges. So there are different models that are competing for the attention of employers. So, again, it can be an Aon Hewitt. It can be a carrier-based exchange that is not affiliated with the state or federally facilitated exchanges. So there are different models that are being considered and are being introduced.
Mm-hmm. So do you expect the state probably like within the next 6 to 8 months to come out with public service announcements, programs explaining to the general public, these are the options that you have, this is what you'll get, this is what you have to pay for?
Well, it depends on which way this Pennsylvania goes.
Okay.
All states nationwide are required by the end of this week, actually on the 16th, to indicate whether they're going to operate a state-based exchange. And there's still a lot of states, including Pennsylvania, that need to formally notify the Secretary of Health and Human Services on their decision.
Mm-hmm. If they don't?
They do have a couple options. One is to let the federal government run the exchange on behalf of Pennsylvanians. Or they can enter into what's called a federal-state partnership, where the federal government would really provide much of the infrastructure, the portal, if you will, to Pennsylvanians and consumers. And then really the state of Pennsylvania would be involved in determining which carriers can be on the exchange, mm-hmm, and really making sure that they meet the criteria necessary.
Okay, so I need insurance by next January. And I have these four exchanges. What will determine how much support? Now, you do get support from the government depending on the package. Let me call it package or exchange that you pick. What will determine how much support I get from the government?
Well, it's your income level.
Okay.
And consumers that make between 133% and 400% of the federal poverty level will be eligible for some assistance from the federal government.
So we're not going to – all of this going to be – the assistance not going to be available to everybody. You have to be within the same. Okay.
That's correct.
Okay. So then, I'm floored by this. I thought I understood it, but that's not such a hot deal, is it?
Well, and the other factor that we have is, of course, this financial cliff that is being discussed right now. And one of the things that's potentially open to discussion between the administration and both houses of Congress is really, do we need to relook at the level of subsidies that are provided to consumers? And so that's something that will be considered.
So you take it from here and you put it down here is pretty much what they're saying, juggling the books. And
exactly.
Wow. Talk to me what Dr. Branson had talked to us about earlier about what the research and the studies have come out. Do you see that? How can I put this? Do you see that as having an impact on healthcare exchanges?
I do.
And how so?
Well, there's going to be a lot in some states. There's going to be in all states. There will be a lot of competition to reach. Provide plans that are affordable to consumers. And like all of us, when we go online and we go on to various other to purchase, whether it's a TV set or purchase a flight, you compare quality, you compare the cost of those options. So we expect things that provide benefits and lower costs.
Which is what you're doing.
Which is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Will become very attractive to consumers and employers.
What's the best part and the worst part about this whole situation? We're kind of trapped, aren't we?
Well, I would say one of the best parts, and you touched upon some of them before, is some of the benefits allowing dependents up to age 26 to remain on their parents' policies, eliminating the ability for insurance carriers to rescind coverage, should you become sick or somebody.
There's no cap on them either, is there?
There's no cap. That's correct. With the new law, it eliminates lifetime and annual maximums on coverage. So those are definitely pros to the law. However, there's been a lack of information that we've, frankly, carriers and the states have been wrestling with. Mm-hmm. So that is definitely one of the challenges. And certainly the exchanges should be up and running in less than 10 months. So there's a lot of work to be done. So,
can we go to your website to get information about that and what Dr. Branson had talked about, what your company will be offering and what Highmark will be offering? I mean, you're both huge companies. You're all over the place.
Yes, absolutely. Highmark has a website, Highmark on healthcare on reform.org. And United Concordia also has a website as well. Mm-hmm. And we provide information to our producers, our brokers that offer and advise our clients. And so, yes, absolutely.
Gentlemen, I'm so glad you came in. Dr. Branson, you're going to keep on doing this work and bringing all these little gems into me down the road,
aren't
you?
That's my job. Yeah. My job is to keep coming back to talk to you.
What a guy. You're encouraged about all this, you've got to be, I don't know about healthcare reform, but you've got to be encouraged about all that's come out of these reports that preventative medicine is working.
Yeah. I mean, I think people in dentistry have believed in kind of known this for a long time, but I'm not sure we got the attention in the medical community that we probably would have liked professionally. And it just took us a while to put the science together that could sort of justify how the physiology works in the body.
Exactly.
And once that sort of gets established, then you can leverage that into taking a look at it in some other respects. So, at our company, we don't do basic science as research, but we sure can go look at claims and costs and utilization and different types of people and how much how much is covered and how much of it that they use. And those things all factor into how is healthcare delivered and how is it priced and how is it actually used. So we're excited about the fact that we have this relationship with our parent company where we can actually go look at data, medical data that a lot of standalone dental carriers cannot do. So that we can actually put those two pieces of dental and medical together. It sort of gets to the, you've probably heard it a lot federally where they talk about data mining and putting big databases together to go look for answers. And we're able to do some of that because we have access to very large databases, both of ours as well as our partners.
You know, all the talk in the recent presidential election about the figures, it's just math. Figures don't add up. These figures certainly do add up.
These figures add up.
And they're good.
They're
good. It's good news.
This study is no fluke.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you came in to talk to us about that. We're going to have you back in and talk about the what else you're going to find in your next study and update about the with Kurt about the healthcare reform exchanges. My guest today, again, Dr. James Branson, the Chief General Officer, and Kurt Shook, Director of Healthcare Reform Exchanges. If you need more information, what's a website?
UnitedConcordia.com.
There you go. Or, as always, contact me here at Amy Clear Channel Stations. I'll pass the information on to you. I'm Sylvia Moss. This has been a presentation of Clear Channel Broadcasting. See you next week.